The pasuk which I want to look at is the beginning of the Porsha, and it's right at the beginning when Yaakov is approaching Esav, and he's walking towards him, and he's came because Yaakov has come back from Lavan, from Haran, where he'd spent all those years getting ready to come back, having children, having the building his family, building the Shvatim, then coming back to Eretz Yisrael. But understanding that Esav perhaps is still bearing the enmity and the hatred towards him for the fact that he took the birthright, even though he sold it to him. He sold it to him, and of course it was with divine endorsement as well. It was all done with Nevuah, with prophecy. It was done, you know, as Hashem wanted this to be. But Esav was perhaps still holding the enmity towards him and the hatred towards him. So Yaakov is scared. He's coming back to Eretz Yisrael. He knows he's going to have to encounter him. And he knows he has large armies and a lot of people with him. And he's scared. He's afraid. So the pasuk says at the beginning, it's chapter 32, verse. Let's read a few verses. He sent messages to Yaakov sent a message via angels. Some say it was angels. Some say it was real messengers to Esav to tell him that I'm coming and approaching, and I want to find favor in your eyes. I have gifts to give to you. But then the pasuk says, chapter 32, verse 8, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od, that Yaakov was very afraid. Vayetza lo, and he was distressed. Vayachat Esav, and he divided the people. He divided his family, his people, Asha'itu, who are with him, Vyasatzon and the sheep, Vyasabakar and the cattle, Vagamalim and the camels, Lishnei Machnos. He divided them into two camps. Vayoma, and he said, Im Yove Esav ala Machna Ha'achas, if Esav should come and attack one of the camps, Vihiko, and strike it down, Vayamachna Hanisha Lifleta, then the other camp will be for survival. Mm-hmm. Simple strategy. And that's what he did. That's one of the things which he did. Also, Medrash says that he also prepared in two other ways as well, by sending gifts and also by davening too. By davening and to feel it to Hashem to be safe. But this particular, you know, strategy of dividing the camp. So the Medrash explains this or elaborates on it. The Medrash says, V'yachat ha'am, that he divided the people, he divided the two camps, and the Medrash comments, and it has multiple levels of meaning. We're going to see, I think, maybe three or four levels of meaning of this expression. In other words, he divided the camp there and there, right? He divided it, and he had one camp, you know, one place, another camp, another one. But the Medrash says, this division of the camp teaches you something, teaches you some practical good advice. Lemadacha Torah derech eretz. The Torah is teaching you good derech eretz, good conduct. The person shouldn't put all his money into one investment or one place of safety and then put it all over there without any other diversity in his preservation of his possessions. So they say this is a biblical source of the idea of diversification in one's investment.
Well, portfolio.
Yeah, portfolio. That's what it is. It said that's what it says. Mimiatalomit, who'd you learn this from? You learn it from Yaakov. As it says, V'yachat ha'sami, divided the people. So this is number one. Derech Eretz, that whatever you have, whatever all the possessions you have, divided into different parts in order, in case one portion gets destroyed, you always have other portions which will survive as well. That's one idea. The second idea, the Medrash says, continues on and says, V'yoma im yovid, the pasuk quotes the pasuk yoma, and he said, if Esav should come to one camp and strike it down, so the Medrash says, Elu achenu shebedorim. This is an allusion to our brethren in the south. This is an allusion to our brethren in the south. So, what's going on? What does it mean? So the backdrop of this is very, very interesting. The backdrop of this, the Medrash is discussing, is the fact that in the future, I mean, we know, as I said before, everything is a portend. It's a foreshadowing of everything. This is a concept of Maisa Ava Simul Labanu, whatever happened to the patriarchs, matriarchs. It's all a foreshadowing what's going to happen to the Jewish people throughout over history. That's how we look at the Torah to see what's going to, you know, what were the roots of everything which takes place. This is also a root. This is also a foreshadowing of what's going to take place. The Chachamim, the sages of the Medrash, are saying that when he said one camp, if one camp gets struck down, there'll be another camp which will be for survival. What's this one camp which is going to get struck down? Now, the truth is, in the story itself with Yaakov and Esav, none of the camps were struck down. Mm-hmm. He came out of the whole story safe and sound. But the fact that he says that there's one camp which, if one camp gets struck down, there'll be another camp which will be for survival. It's a remez, it's an allusion to a future time where one camp of the Jewish people will get struck down in the future. And it's referring, the Medrash says, it's referring to those brethren of ours in the south of where? So the commentaries explain, it's referring to when the Jewish people were exiled from Eretz Yisrael, with the destruction of the first base in Migdash, and they were exiled to Bavel. They were exiled to Bavel, and that's where the Jews lived for, you know, a period of time. Now, it's interesting, when the Jews came back from Bavel with the permit of Cyrus to rebuild the second base in Migdash, a very, very small percentage of Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. There were only about 42 to 43,000 Jews who returned back to Eretz Yisrael with the return of the exiles. This is already 500 BCE, approximately. Mm-hmm. Right, that's a very small percentage of Jews returned. Most of the Jews remained in Bavel. Now, when the Beis Hamikdash was built, the second Beis Hamikdash was built, so then, you know, presumably many, many more Jews did return to Eretz Yisrael at that point. But there were always Jews in Bavel, even throughout the entire period of the second Beis Hamikdash and the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. There was a vibrant Jewish community in Bavel, and it may seem like obvious, but I don't think that's really emphasized. And who were those people? Who were the leaders? Who were the leaders of the Jewish communities in Bavel during the period of the second Beis Hamikdash? Not a lot is said about it. But I will come back to the Medrash in a second to explain this. But I just want to read to you. This is a little paragraph, a page from a book by Rabbi Ken Spiro, who's a very, very respectable historian. He was also, I know him personally as well. He's a prolific speaker on Jewish history. And he says, when the Babylonians fell to the Persians and the Jews were permitted to return, only a small number did. Or what was probably a million Jews living in the Persian Empire, only about 42,000 people went back. Meaning the vast majority of Jews stayed in Babylon under Persian domination. And then during the Second Temple period, up until its destruction in 70 CE, the Jewish community in Babylon, far from the eye of the storm that raged in the land of Israel, continued to flourish. It continued to flourish during the period of the Second Temple and the destruction as well. Indeed, this is where the center of Jewish rabbinic authority came to rest after the Roman Empire shut down the Sanhedrin in 363 CE of the Common Era after the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash. But throughout the entire period of the Second Beis Hamikdash and beyond, always been a Jewish community in Bavel. Just a striking idea that so many Jews never experienced it directly, you know, firsthand, the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash. But the point is, as it relates back to the Medrash, there's a whole Jewish community in Bavel. But there are Jews always, Jews in Eretz Yisrael too, a smaller percentage, at least at the beginning when they came back after the first Beis Hamikdash. But a small percentage was there in Eretz Yisrael. Where's Eretz Yisrael with respect to Bavel, which is Eretz to the south? So this is what the Medrash is referring to. So when it says that one camp, if one of the camps gets struck down, Eilu Achenu Shebadam, these are the Jews, these are our brethren in the south, in Eretz Yisrael. The Chachamim of the Medrash in Bavel are describing or applying this verse to our brethren in Eretz Yisrael in the south. And if they get struck down, and indeed they got struck down, because those Jews in Eretz Yisrael got struck down by the Romans, right? And the Romans are the descendants of Esav. So even though in the actual storyline of Yaakov and Esav, as it's happening, that camp doesn't get struck down in the story itself, but it's But the fact that he said if one camp gets struck down, it does play out in the future. It plays out in the future with the Jews in Eretz Yisrael in the south getting struck down by Esav, the descendants of Esav. Who's that? The Romans. But we're in Bavel, and we are the Plata. We are for survival. We are the survivors. For Hoya Machda Hanishar, and the remaining camp is the Plata, is for survival. We are the survivors. Elu Achenu Shebagos. These are the brethren in Galus. So these are the two camps. This is how it plays out historically. And then the Medrash concludes by saying, Omer B'Shaya Afal Pishanisha LePlata. Even though those in Bavel remain for survival, nonetheless, they daven for those in Eretz Yisrael, for their survival. And it says they not just daven, they fast on Mondays and Thursdays. Mondays and Thursdays is a special day of tefillah. We have an extra tachanun, extra long tachanun on Mondays and Thursdays. It's more propitious on Mondays and Thursdays. Fast days are also, after Yom Tovim, there are fast days which are enacted also on Mondays and Thursdays. But the point is that the Yidden in Galus will daven for the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael, right? At least in those days. And that's a fulfillment of these two camps, right? The camp which, if it gets struck down, and it did get struck down by the Romans, there'll be a camp for Plata for survival, which is the Jews in Bavel. So that's one example, one application of this idea, right? We've had the Derech Eretz application of possessions and money. We have this application now. And then in the Ot Scroll commentary here brings something which is very, very famous, often quoted, very, very important to remind ourselves of how this pattern continued on through history. And there was this, you know, this pattern of one camp being struck down, one camp surviving in the times of the Beis HaMikdash continues on. And there are several examples. The pattern has been repeated throughout the centuries of our exile. When Jews were persecuted in Germany in the Middle Ages, right? That was the camp which was being struck down. They were welcomed in Poland. They're welcomed in Poland. So that was the camp of survival. During the Spanish Inquisition, in Spain, in the times of the Spanish Inquisition, they found refuge in Turkey and in the Netherlands. And of course, the Holocaust, right, consumed the Jews in Europe, but elsewhere in America and England and Israel, that was the camp of survival. This has been the pattern for the Jewish people, that there's always going to be a camp of survival. A very, very important idea which emerges from this, the Jewish people can never get destroyed. This concept of saving the Jewish people is a silly concept. You can save individual Jews, but you can't, it's a moot point to save the Jewish people. We have a guarantee we're going to survive. That's a guarantee from Hashem. We will always exist. And here also is another example. Even if, God forbid, large groups get annihilated, there's always going to be another camp which is going to survive. This is axiomatic. This is embedded in the Torah. It's embedded in reality. There's always going to be a survival of the Jewish people. So he continues on. When the Nazis first rose to power, the Nazis, they made no secret of their intention to annihilate all Jewry. Rabbi Yosef Hanneman, who became the Ponovitch Rav in Eretz Yisrael, inquired of the Chofetz Chaim. This is before the Holocaust took place. The Chofetz Chaim died before the Holocaust. The Ponovitch Rav spoke to the Chofetz Chaim, and he said to him, what's going to be the outcome? Is this going to be possible? They're claiming they want to destroy world Jewry. What's going to be the outcome? So the Chofetz Chaim responded with the words of our pasuk. He says, for the destruction, but the concept of the notion of the destruction of the Jewish people, impossible. Quotes this pasuk, v'yimachan initial, if later, the remaining camp will survive. Rav Kahaneman persisted. Where will they survive? Where will they survive? This is the koach of a chacham. This is the power of a Talmud chacham, of a godl, like a Chofetz Chaim. Right away, a snap of a finger, he said, where will they survive? Another pasuk in Ovadia, in the Navi Ovadia, u'bahatzion tia pleta. And on Mount Zion, there will be survival. This is before the Holocaust began. And the Chofetz Chaim said, where will they survive? Eretz Yisrael. Right? Eretz Yisrael began. I mean, if you think about what was the state and the condition of Eretz Yisrael at the time, it was barely populated by Jews at that time in the 1930s, 1920s. But the Chofetz Chaim said, yes, as this one camp gets struck down, there'll be another camp for the Plata. And where is that camp of Plata? At Zion Tia Plata. Mount Zion, there'll be survival, Eretz Yisrael. And the words of the Chofetz Chaim, of course, were prophetic. A decade later, the tide of World War II began to turn when the Germans suffered defeat in their drive towards Palestine, and Eretz Yisrael was saved. Eventually, the Ponovitcher Rav himself established a yeshiva in Bnei Brak. In commemoration of the Chofetz Chaim's prediction, he ordered these words to be inscribed on the yeshiva building, Ubahatzion Tia Lepleta, this pasuk in Avadia, and on Mount Zion there will be survival. And that's what happened. So it really is a very, you know, significant illustration of this idea that there's always going to be survival of the Jewish people. So now we have essentially two applications of this idea of the splitting of the camp. I'm actually reminded. We're coming to Hanukkah, but after Hanukkah comes Purim, and after Purim comes Pesach. So it just popped into my head. Another time we find the word this dividing of the camp, right, is also the Yachatz. Right, the pasuk says Yachatz is Ha'om, that he split the camp, he split the people. So where's Yachatz in the Seder? Right. And also it's very significant, this segues into the last thing I'm going to say, is that when the when you split the matzah on the Seder night, mm-hmm. you know, you divide it into two unequal pieces, mm-hmm. and you put the smaller piece in front of you through the Seder, and the larger piece is saved till the end of the Seder, which is the Afikoman. So why the large and small pieces? Because the piece which is set aside till the end of the Seder is Lepleta, is for the survival. Mm. And that alludes to the neshama. In other words, the difference between the body and the soul is that the body is, even if the body gets destroyed and the body is struck down, right? That's just the smaller part of who we are. The smaller part of who we are is the body. But the bigger part of ourselves is the neshama, and that survives forever. And therefore, the afikomen is symbolic of the neshama, whereas the smaller piece, which is at the table, is the symbolic of the body. But the same thing here as well. Yaakov is saying, even if one can't get struck down, we will survive, because what enables us to survive? What is the key to our survival? The neshama. So therefore, even if the smaller camp gets struck down, the bigger part of ourselves will survive for all of eternity. That's the other camp. But this is the idea. This is just that part of the Medrash. But the another application, right? If we take another application of this this is not brought down in the commentaries. I just saw this in another commentary by the Reb Nosson of Breslov. Reb Nosson of Breslov was the prime disciple of Rav Nachman of Breslov, the great Hasidic master of a few generations ago. So Breslov Hasidus, etc. Mm. So Rav Nosson of Breslov, he has a piece over here explaining this pasuk, this idea on a much more personal level, right? It applies personally as well. So I'll read what he says. He says, Yachatz Asa'am, that Yaakov divided the people, he split the camp into two parts, Asha'itu, which was with him, the sheep, the cattle, etc., etc., and the other camp will be for survival, the pasuk. So he says, when we see that it's difficult in our personal lives, let me preface this. In other words, this is not just a message for the onslaught of persecution and anti-Semitism from without. It's also a lesson for us for the onslaught of persecution within. Our own personal, we all have a personal Esav inside of ourselves. What is the Esav? The Yetzer Hara. We all experience the challenges which is coming from the Yetzer Hara. So this lesson over here is also a lesson for how to deal with the Yetzer Hara within. We have to deal with the Yetzer Hara, the onslaught of the threat which is trying to sabotage our successes and to hijack us and take us away from the proper path. So therefore this technique can also be applied to us personally in our own personal lives. So that's what he writes. He says, when we see that attaining a solution to a problem is very difficult, we have to proceed with some piece of counsel, with some piece of solution, no matter what. In other words, even if one part of ourselves, one camp, is collapsing, right? We can all think about this in our personal lives. If one part of our lives is collapsing spiritually, but there's always going to be another part of our life which is succeeding. And that's what we have to find. We have to find another part of our lives which is successful, always, or create, and to create and to create a part of our life which is lepleta, for survival. So even if one part of our lives is collapsing spiritually, to find and to attach ourselves with the other part of our lives which is success, which is succeeding, to proceed with the other piece of our, with the other part of our life, with the other part, no matter what. There's always going to be a part of your life, a camp of survival in your life. Not to be lost completely, God forbid. Shalyoma, person shouldn't say, I'll just go and just enjoy myself, Rahman al-Litzan, God forbid. Throw the bag in. So if you see you can't succeed across the board and you're not being as successful as you want to be in your spiritual pursuits and your growth, and then say, I can't do it. You know, every part of me is being sabotaged and hijacked and is collapsing and I'm not getting where I want to get to in life. So that will throw the bag in, give up. No. Yishtadl shal kalpon, a person should endeavor no matter what, to find, to hold on to. Yeshua Mashi, to hold on to what remains. Hain that is, kashiro adam sheyetzah hara misgaba olav. When a person sees that the yetzah hara is overpowering him, commotion is back, commotion is gaba, v'nidmelo shein b'koch olam v'kanegli, he sees the yetzah hara. And the yetzah hara doesn't have to be with, is this about passion? It could be about comfort, about convenience, about any challenges you have, challenges in life, internal challenges. And how we react to the challenges of our lives are all emanations of this, of the Yetzer Hara. Challenges are real. Challenges are part of life and they're part of our growth. How we respond to those challenges. And if we take those challenges in our lives and then collapse and do things we shouldn't do because of those challenges, that's the Yetzer Hara, right? That's the Yetzer Hara. The challenge per se is not the Yetzer Hara. The challenge is just the external circumstances, how we relate to those challenges, what we do and how we respond to those challenges. If we respond to those challenges productively, so that's the Yetzer Tov. If we respond to our challenges in a maladaptive way, and a maladaptive way can be either be psychologically, behavioral, or also spiritually maladaptive. If we respond to them in the wrong fashion and do things which we shouldn't do because of the challenges we have, that's the Yetzer Hara speaking. But that's part of our experience, and the Yetzer Hara sometimes wins over us. But the advice he's giving is this, is when the Yetzer Hara does do its work on us, and the Yetzer Hara, you know, it does manifest itself upon you, nonetheless, find a place in your life which is surviving. Find a place in your life which is surviving. He says, Le'esa ata, this moment, yisnaikafi chalkasa eitza, find a part of your life which is not being sabotaged, which is not being hijacked, and hold tenaciously onto that part of your life. That's the camp of survival. Find a camp of survival in your life to hold on to succeed in the face of the other camp which is being attacked and being brought down. Shezeb bechinas v'yah, that's the idea of the camp being split and the other camp being there for survival. That is, sheyikba liba, a person should establish, fix in his heart, she'eich shia, whatever it is, and ichazuk, I'm strong in that one area of my life. I'm strong in that one area that I'm going to use that as the energy and the power to radiate upon the rest of my life. Now, I want to add in over, he doesn't say this, but it's clear to me, because sometimes you could say, well, okay, so I'll just throw the bag in that part of my life. And here, at least I'm doing all these mitzvahs over here, so I can wipe and I can just wash away that part. And that, then you get a compartmentalized Jew, which is not what the goal is. The goal is in your battle, in the battles against the challenges, as you're trying to overcome them, and you feel you're faltering, and you're not able to stand on 2 feet properly in those battles, those spiritual battles which you're fighting. Now use the energy and the power that places in your life, which is strong, and find a strong part of your life to use that as the energy to radiate out onto the other parts as well. And that's also alluded to in the Medrash, because what did the Jews above all do? They pray for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. They're fasting for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. This concept of the two camps doesn't mean to say we dismiss and push under the rug the camp which gets struck down and only focus on the camp which is surviving. No, there's still that camp which is being attacked have to survive too, and they need the support too. And the camp which is surviving is now davening and fasting on behalf of the camp in Eretz Yisrael. The same thing in our lives as well. So if part of our lives is, and part of our behavior, part of our religiosity, part of our Judaism is getting hijacked and sabotaged and not up to par where it should be, and it's hard and it's difficult, let the other part of your life, let the other aspects of your Jewish life and your spirituality be strong and really tenaciously hold on to that with tremendous conviction and vitality. And then let that daven for the other part as well. Let that energy radiate into the other part of your life as well. You don't give up on the other part. You don't just like throw the bag in the other part. You're saying don't throw the bag in your entire life, but you hold on to the other part of your life, which is lefleta, which is surviving, which is strong, whatever it is, no matter how small of a portion it may be. So he says, Heinrich, a person should fix in his heart, whatever he can do, wherever I can be strong, in order not to fall backwards completely from Hashem and not to despair myself. Rak ani al mishmarti, I'm standing by my station. I'll stand strongly by my station and do whatever lachtov mashu uchel leman. I'll hold on to whatever I'm able to leman yia machne, in order for that other camp, this camp which is immune in my life, to be strong. For example, a person wants to learn a lot, wants to daven a lot, wants to meditate a lot, wants to be spiritually pure. For Rosh Hashanah, but he sees it's very difficult for him to do it all. Yechazik bedaito, he should strengthen his mind, shall kolponim mashu'ucha lachtov, to whatever I can hold on to, whatever I can grasp in my life, is yageya, I will put a lot of energy into it, but kol kochi, with all my energy, I will be very, very dedicated in those areas of my life which are spiritually sound and spiritually pure and where I'm supposed to be, and hold on to it tightly and do it with vigor and vitality. You see, what happens is, when you see you can't, it's like it's the all or nothing thing. It's the perfectionistic, syndrome, because you can't have everything, so therefore the whole picture gets like kind of the whole picture, everything gets slackens and everything goes down because you can't. But no, that's not the right attitude. Yeah, there are parts which are not good. There are parts which are falling, the parts which are faltering. That's the camp which is being struck down. But there are other parts which are lepleta, which are surviving, which are full of vitality, the potential for vitality and strength and devotion. I will put effort with all my power to hold on to Ezatov, whatever I can do of my life. If I can't daven, klal at all, if for some reason this happens all the time, davening, Shemone Esrei, you coast through the Shemone Esrei or the Amida, and you realize you didn't have any kavanah at all during the Shemone Esrei, and you realize you're at the last line of the Shemone Esrei, there's no point anymore. I'll throw the bag in. No, that's an example. One camp got struck down. 99% of my Shemone Esrei camp got struck down by my lack of kavanah. I've got one sentence left to say. This is now my camp of survival. And this is this camp of survival, that one last line of Shemone Esrei, stop, capture it, catch it, hold on to it, say it with tremendous devotion, and let that be the source of the energy. Hold on to that, he says. Afal pike and elmud, I'll learn a little bit, just a little bit. We want to learn a lot, okay? You can't learn a lot. You're too lazy to learn. Learn a minute. Learn, but that 1 minute is holy, is pristine, is kaddish, is so sacred. That 1 minute of learning is sacred. That's your camp of plata, of survival, right? So what's an example? What could be an example
coming
of this?
Coming to a Torah class.
Coming to a Torah class. Yeah, that could be. Coming to shul, to daven. You know, when you go to shul, you're in shul. Okay, so now, are you going to make the shul now just a chit-chatting place to be? You're sabotaging it. This is the camp of plata. Being in shul is the camp of survival. Now you're in shul, and you're in with a Sefer Torah. You got the davening there. Use it. Don't sabotage that. That's your camp of plata. That's your camp of survival, which will now impact the rest of your life. So don't bring talking and schmoozing and silliness and leitzonis inside the shul. That's ruining the holy camp that you're in inside the shul. You're ruining that camp. That's your place. You don't have shul when you're driving in the car. You don't have shul when you're walking around Center City, wherever you are. There's no shul anywhere else. There's no holiness everywhere else. So now the one place which is holy, and now to bring unholiness into that holy place, that's ruining the camp. Don't do that. Keep that camp holy. That's the place. So go to no talking in shul, no schmoozing in shul. Take it seriously with reverence and fear, trepidation, and seriousness. This is the Makam HaMikdash. This is the place of Hashem over here. That's a very important idea. And also cry out to Hashem, save me, Hashem. And he says also, when you have decisions to make, decisions, he says, my counsel and my advice within myself is divided. Should I travel? Should I stay home? This is a very common thing. You're undecided. You're undecided. You have to do something. You don't know what to do. Indecisions, right? Undecidedness is very difficult. Some people have a very hard time with indecisiveness, and they don't know what to do. What happens? Everything becomes like a whole depressed situation. Your whole life becomes like, you know, there's no energy, there's no vitality in it because you don't know which way to go. That's not the right way. He says, you apply it here as well. He says, "Eini yochel lasis eitz." I can't give my advice to myself. I don't know which way to go. But I'll call upon him, and he chazik b'dayti. I'll be strong in my mind. Shebein b'beisi, bein b'derech. Whether I travel or whether I stay home, wherever I go, I will be strong in that decision. I will find a place. I'll find a place of survival in that decision which I didn't know to make. I didn't know which decision to make. So I'm ambivalent. I don't know which way to go. What to do? Okay, so now you have to, but yeah, you decide, you go ahead and do it. Now you're there, put all your energy into it. Whatever you decide to do, to put it, find a plata, find a survival in that one place you're doing, what you decide to do. This reminds me of the doctor who doesn't, the surgeon, the story of the surgeon who, if he's not sure if the operation will be successful. He dared not say that to the patient, right? Even if he entertains a doubt about the success of that surgery, he shouldn't say it to anyone. He shouldn't say it to himself, even if he has that doubt. Because once he makes that decision to do the surgery, he has to put all of his energies into it with a complete conviction it's going to be successful. It's the same idea, but it's finding the places of plata inside of our lives. Mm. Finding the places of plata is the survival. Is these pockets of purity, these pockets of righteousness, these pockets of clarity, these pockets of where you know when you know what the right thing is and you are doing the right thing, that's where you live. That's the place to live. And then to use that as the source of energy and inspiration for the pockets of your life, which is being overtaken by the enemy, by the Yetzer Hara, by the Esavs in our lives. That as that's being struck down, hold on to the plata, the machna of plata of survival, and then daven for the other parts as well. So this is a beautiful, so we have essentially, you know, three levels of interpretation of this pasuk, right? The first level of it is just practical advice about looking after your possessions and making sure your possessions don't get lost completely. That's the first one. The second one is the message for history, the message for the Jewish people, for history, that even if one camp gets destroyed, God forbid, there's always going to be a camp of survival. That's a guarantee. That's a promise, Jewish survival. It's always going to be. It always was, always will be. And the third is, for ourselves personally, that even if parts of our lives get sabotaged and hijacked spiritually, there will always be a part of our life which is for survival, and we can hold on to that and let that be the source of the energy and the power to help survive and give, you know, survival to the other part of our lives as well.